from the day Lisa signed her beauty consultant agreement back in October of 1986, Dan has been an active supporter of her business, not until after that really big week, let's be clear. Yes. As evidenced by his initial reaction, oh, excuse me, that's fine. You can do it. Just don't expect any help from me. While Lisa built her Mary Kay business, Dan was a dedicated middle school teacher and basketball coach for 21 years at Holy Cross Lutheran School in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks to Lisa's success in Mary Kay, Dan was able to leave teaching in 2002 to pursue other interests. In addition to traveling with Lisa and helping her with her business, he pursued the sport of triathlon for 5 years. He raced in more than 30 events from 2003 to 2007. Wow, that's a lot. Highlighted by 2 Ironman Wisconsin finishes in 04 and 05. He spent 3 years in the fitness industry following that. Given his love of writing, Dan has written and published 3 books, including a humorous book at the Mary Kay business from a man's perspective called A Woman with a Man Beside Her. Currently, Dan serves as a general partner and communications director for a small venture capital company based in Minneapolis called Villicus Ventures. His hobbies include biking, golfing, reading, laying in the nude. Just kidding. That was just a rumor. Traveling with Lisa and shortening other people's accolades. He has always been dedicated dad to his 3 kids, Rachel, Jonathan, and Kyle, and now is a doting grandpa to his 4 grandkids. Please help me welcome Lisa's better half, Dan Madsen.
Statement, you can do it, just don't expect any help from me. That's followed me around for 27, almost 28 years now. And I just wanted to fill you in on a couple of details that might explain a little bit more about how Lisa and I have always been in this together, even from that day when I came home from school and she met me at the door with a big smile on her face and said, guess what, I'm going to become a Mary Kay beauty consultant. Now, what she didn't explain to you was that at the time, this was back in 86, I was teaching and coaching. We had 2 small kids. She was working a couple of crummy part-time jobs. We were living in a house that her dad had purchased because we couldn't afford, we didn't even qualify to get a mortgage to buy a house. My original teaching salary, the contract that I signed in 1982 was for $19,000 a year, which wasn't very much, but it was a good job, and she was making a little bit of money on the side, and we were plodding along as best as we could as a young couple with a couple of kids. But we did have needs for other things. We wanted to buy our own house. We needed a second car. At the time, when we got married, we had a little Ford Fiesta. I don't know if you remember those cars. Today they make car seats bigger than Ford Fiestas. And then we upgraded to a luxurious Ford Tempo after that. No air conditioning, by the way. I couldn't afford that extra. So we were driving or sharing one car while we were in Madison. And when there were a lot of times when I would ride my bike the 7 miles to school because she needed the car to go to her job. So we did need some things that were considered basic. We wanted to buy a house and we needed another car. So we did talk about what we could do to bring more money into our family, including things that she could do. And she was by no means averse to working hard. She grew up on a dairy farm. She understood what it was to work hard, and so did I. I grew up in a family of hard workers, pastors and teachers, all my family were in the education field, so we understood what it meant to work hard. So getting back to this comment that I made, what Lisa didn't tell you was that before this woman, Kathleen, came over and sat down and did this interview with her at the kitchen table one day, previous to that, I had been teaching one of my classes in my seventh grade classroom was a literature class, and I did some creative writing exercises with that class, and one of the books that I used was called Creative Encounters with Creative People. And it just so happens that one of the people featured in this book was Mary Kay Ash. And there were others like Walt Disney and Thomas Edison and a lot of famous, very well-known creative entrepreneurs. But Mary Kay Ash was featured in this book, and so I read through this section on her, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I looked at her philosophy, and this is before I'd even heard of the company. I knew pink was the color. That was about all I knew. But I knew nothing else about Mary Kay. But I liked the philosophy, God first, family second, career third. And then I went through and I read through some of the activities that they suggested doing with the class. And one of the activities they suggested was to invite a Mary Kay consultant or director into the classroom to explain what they did to make money. And I had done that before. I had career days with my class where I'd invite parents, kids to come in and talk about their jobs. And the kids always really liked that. So I went home, I remember one night, and I didn't know where Mary Kay lived. So I looked in the phone book. I thought maybe she lived in Madison. She wasn't in there. Obviously, come to find out, she lived in Dallas, Texas. But I did see in the phone book a listing of some sales directors. There were three or four of them, and I happened to notice that one of them was on a street that was just a couple of blocks from where we lived at the time. So I called her on a Thursday night out of the blue, and I explained to her who I was, that I was a teacher at Holy Cross, and I was interested in her to find out if she'd be willing to come in and talk to my seventh grade classroom. And she agreed very happily. Now, what I didn't know is that she had already bumped into Lisa at the print shop. And I'm not sure if she had connected the dots, but I think either subconsciously or consciously she had. So she must have known this was an opportunity to perhaps make contact with my wife. Well, anyway, she came into my classroom. She drove up. I remember she had a pink, back then, before the Cadillac, they were giving away pink Buick Century. I don't know if you guys remember that far back, but she drove up in her pink Buick Century. And she came in and she talked to my kids for a half an hour. She did a great job, and the kids really enjoyed it. And she told how she made money, how she got into the business, and she explained what a skincare party or a class was, and she did a really great job. So that this all these little weird connections kind of came together later when Lisa called her to buy some makeup, and Kathleen asked if she could come over and talk to her about the company. Now, I knew that, like Lisa said in her iceberg, I knew that Kathleen was coming over. And even though we had discussed ways for Lisa to make extra money for our family, this didn't even cross my mind as a potential possibility. Do you want to know what we were thinking about having Lisa do? Now, keep in mind, this is a woman who wakes up in the morning and starts talking and doesn't close her mouth until midnight every night, 7 days a week.
My kind of woman.
She never stops talking. Our plan was for her, because she was an outstanding typist, was to go back to school after our kids were in school and become a court reporter. You know, that's the person that sits in the corner and never says a word and types shorthand for transcribes all the court events. That was what our plan was, because we had looked up and found out that court reporters made a lot of money, and they did. So we thought that's what we were going to do to boost our family income, was to have her go back to school and learn that particular brand of shorthand to become a court reporter, and where she would never be able to talk again. Well, as it worked out, that's a good thing that did not happen. So when Kathleen came over and interviewed Lisa, and she signed the dotted line, she made some phone calls to try to get an inventory. She had all this worked out even before I got home from school that day. So when I walked in the door and she explained to me what she'd been up to, I wasn't shocked, I wasn't surprised. Like she said, I'm kind of a calm guy. I just said, that's great, just don't expect any help from me. And I only said that because I'm a pragmatic person and I knew my schedule. It was very busy. And I just didn't think I'd have time to pitch in to help her do the business. So she got her starter kit. She got her inventory. And when the starter kit came, I wanted to find out more about Mary Kay. So I read Mary Kay's autobiography. I read the consultant's guide, something that I don't think she still has done yet after 4 years in the company. So I had a pretty good grasp of what the company was all about, you know, the marketing plan and the philosophy behind the company and so forth. I had a pretty good idea what it was about. And then when her inventory came, I remember we had the house that we lived in had kind of a half-finished, half-unfinished basement, and we had an older home that it still had the old fuel tanks where you had to buy fuel oil to heat your home. And I remember I went down and I scavenged an old Army surplus desk from our school that we weren't using, took it apart, dragged it down into the basement, reassembled it, set up a little office for her down there in this cold, dark concrete floor basement next to the oil tank. There were some pegboards on the wall, and I went about meticulously organizing her inventory. I'm a neat freak like that.
Wow.
So she came down. So I remember Lisa came down the basement steps as I was hanging all her eyebrow pencils, you know, by color, brown and black, and so forth. And she looked at me like I was nuts. And she said, you don't need to take so much time organizing this stuff. I'm going to sell it all right away anyways. And by golly, she was right. That first week, she had booked four or five appointments, and she went out, you know, nervous as can be, came back from every appointment with a pile of money. And that first week, like she said, she made $682, which for us back then, that was an enormous amount of extra money for our family. And that's really all it took for me to understand that this is something that she could really be good at. And so that little goal of hers to earn $70 a week by Christmas presents back in 86 turned into something quite a bit more substantial. So her plan, or our plans for her to become a court reporter were jettisoned at that point. And we knew that this was something that was gonna be a good thing for our family. Well, as she, you know, her first year, she just went out at night and held a lot of appointments, a lot of selling appointments, sold a lot of product, didn't recruit anybody for quite a while. I think partly because she was nervous about whether this was something that other people would want to do or whether it was, you know, a viable business opportunity. But finally, that she broke that seal as well and really started rolling. After she became a director, and by now we had three kids, we had pretty much realized that this was going to be something that was going to be a long-term business solution for her and for us as a family. And as I look back at Lisa's success, I think there's really one characteristic that defined her as a successful businesswoman in this particular type of in-home business. She got good at a lot of things. You know, this is a skill-based business. You have to learn how to do things, and you have to practice them, and you have to improve at them in order to be good at it. You just have to. But the thing that Lisa did that really set her apart, I think, was her follow-up. Now, let me give you an example of the schedule. When she became a sales director for 14 years, and this didn't change much ever in 14 straight consecutive years, she had a preset schedule. Monday night, she did her sales meeting. Tuesday, Wednesdays, for sure, she would either do a selling appointment or she would go and meet with people. And they started out as small little guest events where she would help her consultants recruit people. And she would travel to Chicago. She would drive frequently to Minneapolis, which was a 4.5 to 5 hour drive. And she would do that in one night. We'll get back at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And she did this regularly. So Monday night was her meeting. Tuesday, Wednesday, she would do either selling or recruiting appointments. Thursday, sometimes she would do that, but Thursday night was her follow-up night. And on Thursday night, she would, if she wasn't out selling or at an event, she would be on the phone from 6 till 9. And I can still hear the conversations where she would call every single guest that was at every single event
on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of that week. And this is something that she did not like doing. But you know what? She did it anyway. And I can still remember her complaining about it, and then she'd sit down and do it. And then she'd say, I really don't want to make calls tonight. And then she'd sit down and do it. And I can still remember the exact, I could repeat the dialogue. You know, she'd ask the people that came to a guest event, what did you like? What could I do different? How could I improve? And she followed up relentlessly with every single potential customer and every single potential team member for not only herself, but for her team members that she was working closely with at the time. And I really believe that that follow-up is critical to moving up in this business. You think about all the times when you're out and about and you see an attractive woman and you want a warm chat with them. You exchange information, you talk a little bit, and then if you're like my wife, you lose the other person's business card and forget to call her back. Or you get home and you're like, oh, I'm too nervous to call her. I really don't think she'd be interested. And you throw the card away or put it somewhere and don't get back to it. Lisa never did that. She always followed up with the people that she had met the night before. So Monday was meeting, Tuesday, Wednesday were appointments. Thursday was typically follow up in the office. Friday, she never worked Friday nights. All three of our kids were athletes, and we invariably were in a gym or at a football field somewhere on Friday nights for many, many, many years, all through grade school, high school, and college careers of our kids. Saturdays, she didn't usually work much on Saturdays. Once in a while she would, but not very often. We'd spend time together. Sunday, we always went to church in the morning, and then Sunday night, she was back in her office from 6 till 9, making preparatory phone calls for the week upcoming. And this was, and I think in 14 years, she maybe missed one night of doing that. So that consistent, persistent activity, income-producing activity, was critical to her success. Now, as I'm wrapping up here, let me give you some examples of income-producing activities versus non-income-producing activities. Making booking calls is an income-producing activity. Wishing you could get some bookings is not an income-producing activity. Coaching and pre-profiling calls, and again, Lisa was very faithful for doing that. When she had an appointment schedule, she always called the people ahead of time, every guest that was coming, and pre-profiled them so she knew what to bring as far as product goes. I can still recite those things. You know, I learned all about T-zones and all that kind of stuff listening to her on the phone. Watching Dancing with the Stars is not an income-producing activity. Holding a facial is an income-producing activity. Taking a nap, and trust me, I love taking naps, is not an income-producing activity. Holding a skincare class is an income-producing activity. Cleaning your bathroom is not an income-producing activity. Doing a recruiting interview is an income-producing activity. Bowling, as much fun as that could be, is not an income-producing activity. Bringing a guest to a meeting is an income-producing activity. Skipping your meeting is not an income-producing activity. Making follow-up calls is an income-producing activity. Playing Words with Friends or Candy Crush is not an income-producing activity. And let me tell you, I'm a Words with Friends addict. I know how much time you can burn with those games. So actually doing Mary Kay is an income-producing activity. Thinking about Mary Kay is not an income-producing activity. So over the years, we both made sacrifices and we both made compromises in our careers so that she could have success in what turned out to be a very lucrative in-home business for us as a family. The last thing I wanted to share is when I was teaching to help earn extra money, I was also a basketball official and a baseball umpire, and I loved that. So I'd go out, she'd be going out doing skincare classes at night, and I'd be going in the wintertime to ref a varsity basketball game, and that took a lot of time. So we'd have to find a babysitter for our three kids. I'd drive an hour in snow, ref a game, and back then I was getting paid $35 per game. I didn't get any gas mileage or anything like that. So I'll never forget one night I came home, and I had driven an hour in snow, made $35, had been gone for 3.5 hours. Lisa got home from a 2.5 hour skincare class and put $475 worth of checks on the kitchen table. And it dawned on me at that point that this did not make sense. As much as I liked officiating, it did not make sense for me to spend that much time to make $35 when she was spending that much time making more than 10 times that amount in her business. So I finished out my year as an official, and I've been doing this for 12, 13 years. I called my partner at the end of the season. I said, hey, I'm done. You're going to have to find a new partner. And that was the end of my officiating career when I realized that this was not, it was feeding my ego, but it was not helping us financially. It was actually hurting us in a certain way. So anyway, even though my initial reaction was don't expect any help from me, I have help. And I always say that my biggest help for my wife in her business was giving her absolute freedom to work as hard as she wanted to make as much money as she possibly could. And I think that's really my biggest contribution to her success was the freedom that I gave her. I never made her feel guilty for being gone at night. I never made her feel guilty for traveling. And we have lived a great life because of her success in Mary Kay. So anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I'll pass back over to the next time we've been there.